Blog Talk Radio.
Behind us and what lies before us are small matters compared to what lies within us. And when we bring what is within us out into the world, miracles happen. Hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. It's Thursday, June 6th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful, clear blue sunny sky here in Los Angeles, and I want to thank you all for joining us today, and we'd love to hear from you, so please, please call in to listen live or ask questions at 714-242-5248, and you can also email us here at the station at www.blogtalkradio.com/Lauren-Leibowitz. Again, that number to call in is 714-242-5248. We have an exciting show for you today, so let's get started. And before we do, I'm sure this thought resonates with many of you, the feeling of being caught up in an endless cycle of wanting bigger and better homes and cars and perhaps finding the perfect life partner or earning more money, right? Doesn't that resonate with you? I know it has with me. But according to my guest today, true contentment in life depends not on having more and better things, but on recognizing the divine being within and reconciling that being with our human self. As an expert in the field of mental health and author of You Are More Than That, my guest today will explain how to align our divine inner wisdom, rewire false beliefs, That's a big one, and trust our innate wisdom to live in the present moment. So please give a warm welcome to the show psychiatrist, Dr. Raj Janeja. Hi, Dr. Raj.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful. We spoke just briefly before we went on air, and once
yes.
again, I'm thrilled to have you on the show and to share your exciting journey and
yeah.
all the wisdom that you have in your book, You Are More Than That.
Well, I'm excited to be here.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. That's good. You know, there was one interesting notion there were many interesting things that I read in your book, You Are More Than That. But I love the notion that we can become the master of our mind to better... Yeah, that's a feeling, right? To better manage the fear, our fear and anxiety. So, what is the first step of awareness we need to deal with in order to achieve this concept?
Well, you know, I think the first step, first of all, we need to keep in mind. I like looking at life in three specific areas: work, love, and play. That kind of covers everything, right? We have, you know, work and relationships and work, and we have relationships and love. And then, you know, we do things to enjoy ourselves and so forth. So I think that's important. The other thing that you were just kind of getting at is that we have to have a model of the mind, right? We all have problems. But we, of course, you know, we have to look for the solutions. But in order to look for the solutions, if we're only looking at, let's say, 10-20% of the data of the material, then clearly it's difficult to find the root cause. So this is when I say, you know, we need to understand at a deeper layer what's happening. We need to understand that there are things going on in our mind, there are thoughts going on in our mind that we are not necessarily aware of. And so we have to commit to that process of self-awareness that says, I wonder why I do that.
Okay, so I guess that's the first step of committing to that process of self-awareness.
Yes, I mean, so the curiosity. First, we've got to get curious, right? Instead of just asking or just saying, oh, you know what, this is just the way it is. Oh, well, you know, this is my job and this is my marriage or relationship and, you know, these are my kids and this is just how life is. Now, of course, many people, you know, end up having a middle-of-the-road experience that way. And, you know, surprise, surprise, they say, well, you know, I don't have so much happiness in my life. Or they are somewhat disconnected with their passion. So we have to first identify, well, what is the problem? You know, where am I happy and where am I not so happy? Because if you think about it, Lauren, everything we do in our work life, in our love life, in our play life is in order to become happier.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. And I think a lot of us tend to look outside of ourselves, our jobs, material possessions, to make us happier when all we really need to do is to step inside in our inner castle to...
That's right.
That is the scariest thing to do because we don't know what we'll find and we don't want to embrace that or love that as ourselves.
Well, you know, it creates a lot of anxiety. I think you're absolutely right on the dot there that, you know, when we say and when we realize that, wow, it really is my choice, it really is my responsibility to fix my life, that's a lot of responsibility. Because it's a lot easier to say, you know what, it's your fault, it's his fault, it's her fault, it's my parents' fault. It's a lot easier to say that. And on that note, one thing to keep in mind, you know, so, you know, this self-exploration or, you know, looking at the psychology and understanding who we are psychologically, our belief systems, isn't to blame our parents, isn't to blame somebody for it. It's just to understand, you know, what happened in my story, what happened, you know, while I was growing up that I took in some of these false beliefs. I think one of the fundamental errors, and this gets back to where you started off the interview, one of the fundamental errors that we make in mankind is we think that our happiness is somehow related to our outside world. You know, so like you said, if I buy the bigger house, if I buy that watch, if I go on that trip, I'll be happier. And, you know, let's be fair, material, you know, acquiring material things, it brings a little bit of a joy for a little while. But the problem is it's not sustainable, right? You buy the new car, about a month later, you know, the next model comes out, and you're at the stoplight, and you're looking at the neighbor's car. You're like, I like that one now. So, you know, I call that the current moment and the next best thing. And we can always add one. You know, you can always one up. And so we have to understand that internal reality and external reality are two different things.
Right. Well, if you don't mind sharing what you do in your book about your own personal experience.
Sure.
This illustrates a perfect example of this topic about... it's not necessarily belief, but how we interpret actions our parents do. You mentioned coming over from India
sure.
When you were a small boy, and how your mother was. You were looking for the love of your mother, and it wasn't what you expected, and how you internalized that. If you could share that story with us,
Course. No, I think it shows this, you know, with some clarity or clarifies this. So there's a couple experiences I'll share. One is the one you're talking about. And, you know, when we first moved over here from India, I was 5 years old. And, you know, you can imagine as a, you know, a woman, my mother, you know, in her 30s, leaving your parents, brothers, sisters, and your homeland, essentially, you know, from New Delhi to Rockford, Illinois, in the middle of winter, it was quite a shock.
Mm-hmm.
And not for me, but particularly for my mother. My father was not with us. And, you know, my mother was quite sad about all this, you know, all these changes or, you know, again, all the separation and this, all the loss in the sense of her home environment. So you can imagine as a little kid, I was 5 years old, right? And I would, you know, mom loved me, you know, just like any little kid does, right? But
sure.
My mother, in that there was a certain time period I wasn't really, you know, or I, she wasn't able to really, you know, be there in that way for me. In fact, my sisters tell me, oh, yeah, well, Mom used to cry when we were younger. I don't remember that. You know, I was a little kid. But what happened is I took in a belief, and this is the key point here, is that young kids are always taking in their environment and then forming beliefs out of them. So the belief I took in was that, oh, well, if Mom isn't loving me or isn't emotionally available right now, it must be me. I must not be lovable, right? And so now this gets set up as an unresolved conflict in my mind as a child. Now let's jump forward, you know, 20 years, you know, right? I'm in my 20s, I'm dating and so forth. Guess what kind of women I end up choosing to date? I end up choosing women that are really emotionally not so available. Now, this had little to do with the women that I was choosing. You know, some women are more emotionally expressive, others are less. So this is not to say it was anything about them. What it was about me. It was about my unresolved conflict and the recreation of this in, you know, in who I was choosing. So to all of your listeners out there, one of the things that we have to really be mindful of is that, you know, whatever partnership, marriage, you know, relationship that you might be in, is that there are parts in that relationship that are recreations of your childhood.
Yes, and I think when you can get to that point and realize that it wasn't anything you did as a child, but how you interpreted the relationship or what you weren't getting from your mother as your fault, that was a, because I had a little light bulb moment about that myself today, because I was talking about our interview with a friend, and it just threw a light bulb moment on me about my own mother and being the second child of two and having an older brother who was favored and trying to get her attention by doing well in school, et cetera, et cetera. So it's the same thing. And when you can come to that recognition and have clarity about that, it's much easier to move forward. We have a caller here.
Yes.
Let's see if someone would like to add to this wonderful conversation.
Sure.
Hi, you're live with Dr. Raj. Do you have a question? I think this person would just like to listen in, and that's just fine.
Oh, that's okay.
That's okay.
So, yeah, but going back to that conversation, so, and let me give you a different example. When also, again, going back to my childhood, you know, people say, does it always go back to your childhood? And the answer is, yes, it does, because that's where we, you know, form our initial beliefs, right? Some of them were right, some of them were not right. Now, so the other example, one of the things, you know, I always, you know, had heard growing up was this kind of this expression, become someone, right? Become someone. Really, the message was meant to, what my family was trying to say was, listen, don't struggle, you know, get an education, do well for yourself with a job and so forth, and, you know, become someone. You know, that's really what the message was. How did I hear it? How I heard it is, oh, I am no one. I am an empty glass. I have to put something of value in this. And again, let's jump forward, you know, and I wasn't one of these, you know, young people who was a straight-A student in high school and just went off to med school, and that wasn't me. I took very much the long route. I went to graduate school. It took me some time to get into med school, et cetera, et cetera. But I was heck bent over getting into med school. Why? Because I thought that was going to give me my self-worth, right? I thought, oh, I'm going to become a doctor, you know, right? I'm going to become a doctor, and then I'll be someone. And I'll tell you, Lauren, what ended up happening, you know, Lincoln Center, you know, sunny day, graduation, everybody's there. Finally, you know, I did it. You know, all those years, you know, and I'm in cap and gown, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. I didn't feel any different. I said, what is going on here? This was supposed to do it, you know? And that was, again, the beginning of me really starting to see that this was very much part of my story, that this had much less to do with reality and much more to do with what I thought was true but wasn't true. Because self-worth is not something, this is what I ultimately realized, was that self-worth is not a fluctuating product. It doesn't come and go. It's there when we're born and it's there when we, you know, when we leave this planet. And it's just how connected am I to it? Now, again, going back to this, you know, where people get hung up is when people run into problems in their life, financial, personal, relationships, addictions, mood problems, et cetera, they translate that into feeling less worthy. That's the mistake. That's the mistake. Because we all have problems. Who doesn't have problems? We all do.
Of course we do. I mean, that's the challenge. And through those problems, those are the greatest gifts because you get to learn a lesson of some sort. That's my feeling.
Hopefully. You're absolutely right. Hopefully we do.
Well, hopefully. Otherwise, you repeat it.
You know what? Otherwise, life keeps turning up the volume. The late Eric Butterworth, who was one of my mentors, he would always say, you can go through it or you can grow through it.
That's a great saying. I always see that fear is that dirty four-letter word that has or takes its hold on people's life in moving forward in any format, whether it's a career or relationships. And it's just a little, you know, we tend to think we're at the edge of the cliff and that one step forward is going to be the end of everything.
That's right.
You realize it's just the curb.
Mm-hmm.
There's really just a small step to take. And I want to tap into this about the feeling that we're not alone, because I think I've had that feeling myself that, okay, I'm going to embrace. I think what my little aha moment, light bulb moment of a turnaround is when my mother was ill with Alzheimer's, and I realized she died relatively young from the disease. And I realized that she never fulfilled her own potential, and that life, it's not a guarantee. Just because, I don't know, you could be 50 and somebody says, you've got 50, 60 years ahead of you. Just, you know, breeze on through. There's no guarantee. Doesn't matter what age you are. So grab life by the reins and jump in it with this enthusiasm and, like you say, curiosity to discover yourself. And I want to talk about, you mentioned so many times throughout your book about the divine being, our spiritual being. So how do we connect to that to help us dismantle these old beliefs and generate new healthy ones?
Right. So actually, I think that's a perfect question, because you're saying, how do we dismantle these old beliefs, right? You know, I was in the Javits Center, which is like one of these large convention centers in New York City the other day, and they had this very elaborate, you know, glasswork with all these supporting beams and so forth. And I was thinking, you know, if there was a defective beam, if one of those beams was defective somehow and it needed to be replaced, we wouldn't just go start pulling things apart, right? We'd have to understand, how did this thing get put together? Where are the main structural forces here? So then we would, you know, intelligently make a decision and decide, oh, that's how we're going to do it. Well, you know, the mind is not so different. You have to go and understand where in the story, just like in the story, a couple of the examples we were talking about, you know, where in my story did I take these false beliefs in? Because once we understand where those false beliefs live, then it actually frees us from those beliefs. Now, maybe a better way, you know, maybe initially it loosens it. And then we say, you know, we challenge it. And then we realize, oh, like you said, we get out of our comfort zone. I can do that. And slowly that old belief dissolves. It solves itself that it wasn't true. Because the rate limiting step in, you know, in our mind is in our story. You know, it's what happened to us and so forth. Now, again, Just because, think about it, if I grew up in India, I think, who would I be? I don't know who I would be. You know, would I even speak English? Maybe, maybe not. You know, maybe I would be.
Is that something
you've
often thought about, that if your life hadn't brought you to the United States and you grew up in India, what your life might have been?
Yeah, because the story would be dramatically different, right?
Sure.
So what that tells us, Lauren, is that we are not our story. We are we're the spiritual being within this body experiencing the story. Sometimes, you know, I can take a step back in my own mind and say, you know, if I'm looking out through my eyes, but it's my spirit looking out, and, you know, looking out at even my hand and saying, oh, this is the hand of the body that I'm inhabiting right now. Because, you know, energy can't be created or destroyed, you know? So when we pass, you know, our energy transforms. And so, you know, while we're on this earthly plane, you know, we have to decide, you know, what do I want my story to be? You know, because just because somebody's story has been a certain way, certain things have happened, maybe certain traumas have happened and so forth, it doesn't mean that they have to be the defining aspects of one's life. The story can be changed, right?
Right.
Now,
I think we need to know that we're in charge. I don't think people feel that there's a switchboard that you can change a knob, open a door, close a window, pull a blind.
Mm-hmm.
You're in charge. It's like the Wizard of Oz, right? You're in charge of you and the choices that you make. If we give ourselves that power, not the power of control, but to know that we have the ability to make the shift.
That's right. Actually, I think that's a great example. It is like the Wizard of Oz, and it's almost like we think we're the performer up on the stage, but really you're the one who's behind the scenes, you know, our truest spiritual self. That's what we're talking about right now. And many people, again, you know, get into these repetitive self-sabotage patterns in their life because it's their thoughts that the thoughts are creating their reality. So again, we have to go and examine the thoughts, which goes back to the story. And you know, the listeners, you know, what I want them to know is, you know, you are more than that. You are more than, you know, just your story. You are more than just your job. You are more than just the mother or father. You know, there's so many aspects to who we are, and it opens up a very rich, you know, array of experiences to really have in one's life instead of feeling, oh, well, this is who I am. Sometimes people with addictions, for example, will say, oh, I'm an addict. And that's it. Close, done deal. They never get to experience really too much, you know, too many other things in their life because they limit themselves with that label.
That's
so
true.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you've probably touched on a very important topic because we have another caller. So
okay.
Let's see what our caller has to say. Hi, welcome to the show. You're on with Dr. Raj. Who's this?
Hi, Dr. Raj.
Hi.
Hi there. I was going to ask you, and well, I think you just sort of answered my question because I had, I was trying to call in a little earlier, but you had, what do you think it is that gets people so stuck? You had mentioned their thinking. Do you think there's anything else that gets people so stuck in their lives?
Could you give me maybe an example? I think it'd be probably a little more meaningful to you. Is there a particular area you feel stuck that we could maybe use as an example?
Well, I was thinking about what you had just said about addicts. Somebody
mm-hmm.
says, "Well, I'm an addict," and as if that somehow completely defines and explains everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that that person is stuck.
Well, yeah, I mean, so clearly labels, for example, so that would be like if we get too hung up in that label, we can get stuck, right? You know, doctors or sometimes other professionals can get so over-identified with what they do that they get stuck in that role that they, you know, so it's an over-identification with this human realm, you know, and they really forget, or maybe they really never even really had the idea that, again, you are more than that. You know, you're not just this person who does this job. There's so much more going on. So I think it really, to answer your question, it's an over-identification with a certain belief, false or true, right? So if it's like, say, for again using a professional, you know, say somebody's a doctor another type of professional, they over-identify with that, and that's, you know, gets them stuck. Or say somebody who has a false belief, I'm not worthy, you know, I can't do that. That gets them stuck. So again, it goes back to, I think, our story, and we have to understand what parts of the story are true and what parts of the story are false, you know, and go back and look at for the call, you know, kind of where did these beliefs come in, and then we can start loosening from them and realize that we are really quite, you know, potential beings. We can really do, you know, whatever we set our mind to. And you know, let me say one other thing. I think everyone is a genius. And what I mean by that is there's something in each one of us that we do that is absolutely done like no one else, you know, can do. Even if somebody, I'll use an extreme example, has, say, a low IQ, right? Let's say they have, you know, borderline intellectual functioning. They still have a genius within them. Because I'll tell you, you know, you ever seen how somebody who might have, intellectual functioning issues, but they express love like no other. You know, they're so in touch with that pure expression, you know, of who they are. So everybody has their assets, everyone. And the thing is, many people don't believe that they do. They believe in the I can't. So often, Lee, I tell people, and maybe this is a nice take-home for all the callers, you know, or all the listeners and callers, to ask yourself when you get up in the morning, am I in the I can space or am I in the I can't? Because many people are in the I can't space and don't even know it, right? Well, so, well, can I go ahead?
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but words like, you know, can't and should are dynamite. You know, they're so highly powered that I guess I just wanted to add that don't you think it's mindful to watch the language? That language is so important.
I'll tell you, words are extremely powerful. You know, somebody will walk in and say, oh, it's killing me. And I'll say, listen, be careful of what words you use, you know. Because, you know, what's another way you can express that? You know, what's another way you go, okay, well, you know, this is really difficult. I'll say, okay, well, doesn't that feel different now, right? So, no, words are very, very powerful. And we have to go, and really what we're talking about is mindfulness. What we're being mindful of our mind, of our thoughts.
Dr. Raj, I can't believe that 30 minutes has gone by in a
nutshell.
That was really fast.
That was really
fast. And I want to get your website out because we have just seconds left. It's thedrraj.com. I want to thank you so much for being my guest today. You are delightful, delicious. Please come back and share your wisdom at another time. So
again, thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you so much. Again, Dr. Raj Janeja's book, You Are More Than That, I recommend it. It's a wonderful read. So please grab your copy and find a comfortable place and enjoy this fabulous read with Dr. Raj Janeja. And again, you can reach him at www.thedrraj.com. Thank you for joining me today, and please join me next time for another wild and fascinating journey in someone else's shoes, when my guest will be the woman behind the Obrahan Method, Vivian Obrahan. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you again for joining us today and listening to Dr. Raj Janeja, and I hope that you find comfort in your own shoes. We'll see you next time, and I'm going to leave you with Caroline Waters and Full Moon Rising.
You don't gotta find you. You gotta.